Okay, so today is the auspicious transcendental appearance day of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. And before we read something from the Bhagavatam, I'm just going to read a few notes that were compiled by Srimad Madhavananda Prabhu. He's the editor, author of the Sri Krishna Katamrita Bindu. He issues those every, 2 weeks or a month. And he just recently put out a few brief notes that he's gathered up from various sources, mainly the Hari Bhakti Vilas, about how to observe Janmashtami. So I'm going to read through that. It's quite interesting, and just it's a nice reminder about the importance of the day and the importance of the proper observations as well that are associated with it. So this is issue number 207, Observing Janmashtami, Notes from the Sri Hari Bhakti Vilas. So he starts with text 247 to 542 of the 15th section of the Hari Bhakti Vilas, which describes the glories of Janmashtami and how to observe it. The introduction to this section describes three reasons for observing the Lord's appearance day. Niyatvam cha param tasya bhagavat prinanan matam vidivakya visheshatcha karane pratyavayata. The observance of Janmashtami is accepted as a regulative principle in three ways. 1. The Supreme Lord becomes pleased when one observes it. Good reason. 2. There are special Shastric injunctions requiring its observance. And 3. It is a fault not to observe it. It's an interesting order. First of all, you do it for the pleasure of the Lord. Even if you can't do it for the pleasure of the Lord, you should do it in a manner of duty. And if you don't do that, you're in trouble. That's basically the order there. So, for Krishna's pleasure, that the observance of Janmashtami pleases Krishna is supported with the following statement from the Skanda Purana, which is a little long Sanskrit-wise, so I'm going to skip that, but I'll read the English. For the pleasure of Lord Vishnu, even great kings like Prahlad Maharaj faithfully observed the vow of Janmashtami, which is very dear to Krishna. It is the duty of everyone to celebrate Janmashtami every year, on the 8th day of the dark fortnight of the moon in the month of Shravan, when it is joined by the Rohini Nakshatra, for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord, who carries a chakra in his hand. So that's an injunction from the Skanda Purana. Because it's interesting that it says Prahlad Maharaj was also observing it, and it gives very specifically the date of Krishna's appearance, or you know, the constellation configuration, which means that Prahlad Maharaj was observing Krishna's appearance day from many millions of years before. So it's not just from 5,000 years ago, but Krishna appears regularly in this universe. All the great devotees are aware of that, and they all observe his appearance day. So Prahlad Maharaj is one example of that. The faults of non-observance. Text 269 to 282 of the this section of the Hari Bhakti Vilas cite the Vishnu Rahasya Purana, describing various ghastly reactions that one will suffer by not properly observing the Janmashtami fast and offering special worship to Krishna on this day. And a few examples are given. Eating on Janmashtami is equivalent to eating the flesh of a vulture, a crow, a hawk, or a human being. If one eats on Janmashtami, they get the reaction of eating all the sins of the three worlds. If one eats even a tiny bit on Janmashtami, they will be tortured by the Yamadutas after death. Those who eat on Janmashtami take 100 generations of their ancestors and 100 generations of their offspring with them to hell. It is the duty of all devotees to observe Janmashtami, even with a very small budget, for the pleasure of the son of Devaki. One should not fail to celebrate Krishna's appearance day. Otherwise, one will be forced to reside in hell for a kalpa. So one kalpa, 1,000 cycles of yugas, you can live very nicely in hell. So that's quite strong. Material benefits. Text 283 to 340 then go on to speak about the glories of following Janmashtami as collected from various Shastric sources. This section entices the reader with many material blessings. For example, Hari Bhakti Vilas, text 283 to 284 and 289 to 292, quotes from the Bhavishottara Purana regarding the benefits of observing this festival. By observing Sri Krishna Janmashtami, one becomes free from the sinful reactions committed in seven lives. One gets good children, good health, and great wealth. One will not have to fear enemies, and will get sufficient rainfall and never have to suffer from drought. It's nicely raining right now, as we're observing. One will not have to fear natural calamities, hellish conditions, snakes, disease, or the attacks of rogues and thieves. So then there's an analysis that's given by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur about these benefits that come. So in this connection, it is interesting to note Thakur Bhaktivinoda's enumeration in the first chapter of the Chaitanya Shikshamrita of the various general motivations that people have for trying to please the Lord. So he gives four reasons. One, bhaya, out of fear. So after having read the faults of non-observance, one would naturally, or if he's intelligent, should have a little fear of not observing. Two, asha, for satisfying material aspirations. That's the material benefits section. Three, kartavya buddhi, out of a sense of duty. It means literally a mentality of what should be done. Kartavya buddhi, having that right mentality. And four, raga, out of a genuine affection or attraction for the Lord. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur elaborates on these motivations. He says that those who take to worship of the Lord out of bhaya, asha, or kartavya buddhi are not on such a pure level. Those who worship the Lord according to raga are the real worshippers. Bhaya o asha nitasta heya. Bhaya and asha are extremely low class, out of fear or you want something. When a practitioner's intelligence becomes clear, he gives up bhaya and asha, and kartavya buddhi becomes his sole motivation, doing it because it's the right thing to do. As long as raga towards the Lord has not appeared, the devotee should not give up worship according to kartavya buddhi. From this sense of duty, kartavya buddhi, two considerations arise: vidhi samana, which is respect for the rules, and avidhi parityagya, avoidance of those things which are contrary to the rules. So you do things because you know it should be done, that's the right way to do it. So that's at least the minimum level that a devotee should be working on. Of course, it's okay if you work according to the other motivations, but it's not on a very high level. And if you're not feeling very fearful, you may give it up. Or if you feel that you have enough material opulence, again, you may give it up. Sometimes people don't like to worship Krishna, actually. They resent worshipping Krishna. I have a good example. There's one lady that I've come into contact with recently. She's an older Bengali lady. So her and her husband gave a nice donation some years back to the Krishna consciousness movement. And now as a result of that, she frequently tells me that, why should I say Hare Krishna? She said, what has Krishna ever done for me? We gave this donation and now we have nothing. Yeah, before we were getting so many thousands of rupees every month, and now we're not getting anything. So why should I say Hare Krishna? So that's unfortunate. They've given a nice donation for the pleasure of the Lord. It's being used in the Lord's service. But now because her material opulences have been, the Asha have been reduced, now she's resenting it. So she's becoming very fearless in criticizing Krishna that he's taking away all of her material benefits, because she doesn't understand that you give something to Krishna, then although it may appear that you reduce in material opulence, which is sometimes the case, Krishna doesn't like his devotees to remain attached to material existence. So sometimes he makes an arrangement, oh, this person has given me something, you know, out of duty or affection, so I'm now going to make the arrangement to cut off all of their material ties and their material attachments, because it competes. Because it competes. So he makes some arrangement to reduce their material opulences. So in that way, having everything taken away from them, the idea is that they'll have no other shelter except Krishna. Instead of taking shelter in their material situations, when that becomes smashed, yeah, then where is your recourse? So you have to surrender to Krishna. That's the idea. That person had a little affection or had some attraction. They wanted to do something for the pleasure of Krishna. So this may be his reciprocation, that he takes everything away from you. And Srila Prabhupada, of course, he often quoted that verse, I don't know the Sanskrit, but when Krishna is pleased with you, with a devotee, then he takes everything away from you. Then you have nothing, then all there is Krishna, Krishna's lotus feet. So Prabhupada said he experienced that practically in his own life. He was supposed to actually buy the predictions of some qualified astrologer, he was supposed to become one of the richest men in India. That was, you know, seen there in his horoscope. But somehow or another, although Prabhupada had some initial success with his businesses, and he actually had the idea that I'll do business, I'll make a lot of money, and I'll use that to worship Krishna, print books, build temples, I'll do so many things. That was his idea. But somehow or another, the money never came. He was always struggling, and he had so many setbacks actually in his life. In the 1940s, he had his money in a bank. The bank collapsed. He lost all his money. His business collapsed. His factory was burgled. Yeah, somebody started. He thought it was the servant that he left in charge of it, actually. But gradually Krishna took everything away from him and left him totally penniless. And in that condition, then he went to Vrindavan, and then he actually achieved the highest levels of ecstasy in Krishna's service. When he had absolutely nothing materially, then he gained everything spiritually. So Prabhupada had a lot of practical experience of that. So that should be our real motivation. If we don't have that motivation, then at least we should be doing it out of a sense of duty. That we know, we hear from the authorities, that to worship the Lord, do some special kinds of worship on this day. In other words, to remember Vishnu Smaranam, to remember Krishna, particularly on these days, that must be done. So we make an arrangement, we have, you know, special programs and classes, and we put on dramas, we sing extra bhajans, we chant extra rounds, we fast. These are all done just for the pleasure of the Lord. Now we may not immediately experience the pleasure of Krishna's reciprocation when we make these observances. But Krishna notes it. And in due course of time, then the full manifestations of Krishna's pleasure will appear within the heart of a sincere devotee. It's just a question of a little time, that's all. And by doing these observances, at least we get purified. We make a sacrifice, we give up our material comforts. That's the idea of fasting. It's a sacrifice that we do for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. It may be a little difficult, giving up eating for one whole day. But if we do that, Krishna notes that he's doing that for me. So he becomes very, very happy with that devotee. So in that way then, the heart becomes purified. That means that we gain a little detachment from our material life, from the pleasure of the senses, the pleasure of the mind, the pleasure of the intellect. These are, you know, this is the happiness of material existence, body, mind, and intelligence. So if we make some sacrifice, yeah, we keep the senses subdued, we keep the mind under control, we keep the intelligence focused as a matter of duty, kartavya buddhi, the intelligence must be controlled by a sense of duty. And in that way, then our Krishna becomes very happy. He's making this sacrifice just for the sake of pleasing me. So that way, then eventually we come to this purified stage of raga, where we actually directly perceive Krishna's pleasure and reciprocation when whatever we do, the actions that we perform, it's all done for him. So that's the idea. So it takes a little time, but sadhana bhakti, that's our process. So observance of Janmashtami is a very important part of the sadhana bhakti process. When you come to the raga platform, it will automatically arise. But at least for us, we can do it as a sense of duty. So then Madhavananda Prabhu, he gives a little quote from Srila Prabhupada, his instructions about observing the rules of the Janmashtami Vrata. This is in a commentary in the Bhagavad Gita 11:54. Prabhupada says, there are so many rules and regulations, and if one at all wants to understand Krishna, he must follow the regulative principles described in the authoritative literature. One can perform penance in accordance with those principles. For example, to undergo serious penances, one may observe fasting on Janmashtami, the day on which Krishna appeared, and on the 2 days of Ekadasi, the 11th day after the new moon and the 11th day after the full moon. So that's a couple of examples Prabhupada specifically cites for pleasure of Krishna. Do this little bit of austerity. So having talked about fasting, then I see every year the same debate comes up as to whether it's okay to serve prasadam out to visitors that come to the temple. You know, everybody's supposed to be fasting, and how should we break the Janmashtami fast after the midnight arati? Should we have Ekadasi prasadam, or should we have a full grain feast? These points get discussed practically every year, so he's given a few quotes here to help clear that up. So food versus prasadam. So as it mentions there, you can, if you eat on Janmashtami, there's so many hellish reactions that come. So as cited above, Hari Bhakti Vilas, verse 272, states that anyone eating even the smallest morsel on this day will have to go to hell. One may ask then, why is it that Prabhupada did not repeatedly stress this point, and why is it that many Vaishnavas serve prasadam to their guests on Janmashtami? Although forbidding the eating of food on this day, the Hari Bhakti Vilas does not describe any adverse reactions for persons who honor prasadam. Krishna states in the Bhagavad Gita, Yajna Shishta Shinashanto Muchante sava kilbishai. Bunjate te tuagampapa. Yepachanti atma karanat. The devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sins because they eat food which is offered first for sacrifice. Others who prepare food for personal sense enjoyment verily eat only sin. So it's a little different if you eat prasadam. And prior to the section describing the glories and rules of Janmashtami, Hari Bhakti Vilas already described that prasadam is not to be considered food. Like Krishna himself, it is always situated beyond this material world. And then he gives, in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, it gives a quote from the Brihad Vishnu Purana, which again, I'll skip the Sanskrit, but the translation is, those foodstuffs and beverages that are offered to Krishna for his pleasure are transcendental, and one should never try to distinguish them as eatables and non-eatables. Offerings to Sri Krishna or Sri Hari are transcendental, incorruptible, and non-different from Vishnu himself. So, in other words, if you eat prasadam, you're honoring Lord Vishnu. You're coming in direct contact with him. And to make a distinction that this is food, that's actually offensive. I remember one time when I first came to India to stay. That was in 1975. I'd had my first visit to India during the Mayapur festival, Gaur Purnima festival, and then the Krishna Balaram Mandir was opened. That was the on the Ram Navami day. Then we went back to the West. After a couple of months, I couldn't settle, and I decided that I wanted to come back and live in Vrindavan in the new temple and serve there. So I came back, and then a short time afterwards, we went out on a preaching engagement, and the temple president at that time, Akhoyananda Swami, he took us to this life member's house, and then we had prasad. They cooked up nicely, and then we ate it, and then we finished. Then some leftovers, I think, were brought. So I immediately started eating that, and he chastised me. And he said, you can't do that. He said, that is juta. The Hindi word, I think. Juta. It means it's leftovers. Now it's contaminated, so you should never take it. And he was chastising me. You don't know what cleanliness is. And then I chastised him that you don't know what prasadam is. Prasadam is never juta. I said, that concept may be there, you know, in the traditional Hindu, you know, samskaras or whatever it is, you know, wherever it's described and observed. But as far as we're concerned, as devotees, prasadam can be eaten in any condition at any time. It doesn't matter. It's never contaminated and it is always purified. So I got on his case quite heavily about it. He wouldn't back off, but anyway. I was proved correct, actually, a short while later, because Prabhupada came to the Krishna Balaram Mandir for Janmashtami, and he stayed through Radhashtami. So when he first arrived, we all, of course, went into Prabhupada's darshan room. I was the temple commander at the Krishna Balaram Mandir at that time. And when we came in, we offered our obeisances. Then Prabhupada saw me, and he recognized me from Australia. Although I never had any kind of real personal service that I'd done for him, but from a few morning walks. I mean, Prabhupada had an amazing memory. Out of all the thousands of people that he was seeing, somehow or another, he saw this, you know, one boy, oh, he's from Australia. Immediately he asked me, how is everything in Australia? So, you know, I gave a little report. And then I thought this is a good opportunity to clear up a controversy. So what had happened was that just before I left Australia in June or July of 1975 to go and live in Krishna Balaram Mandir, the GBC in Australia, Madhavisa Swami at that time, he had, you know, we were just getting all these new volumes of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So everybody was very eagerly reading that. And there's some place there where he found a quote that, you know, if you dishonor prasadam, if you throw it away or, you know, in somewhere or another, don't treat it properly, then, you know, you become a leper or something for the next seven lifetimes, or some horrible reactions are there. So then he started to think that on the Sunday feast, because we have so many people coming, and then they eat, and then whatever they leave, the kami guests, because devotees would never leave anything on their plates, not necessarily out of a sense of duty, but, you know, we were ravenous usually. Whatever the karmis would leave on their plates, that would always be thrown into, you know, a big dustbin. And then the next day we would go out, or the same evening. I know in Sydney we used to go out. That was one of my duties when I first joined the temple, that we would go out with the leftovers from the Sunday feast, and we would drive out to a place called the Gap, which is where the Sydney Harbour begins. There's big cliffs, 100 feet high. People go there and throw themselves off on a regular basis. But we used to go there with the prasadam, and we would crawl out onto this ledge. We'd be like 100 feet above the rocks and the ocean there. And then we'd throw all the leftovers into the ocean. And the idea was that, you know, the fish would come and eat it and then get the benefits of the prasadam. But we didn't think about keeping it at the temple, of course, because it had been eaten by the karmis. So anyway, that was the mentality. And then Chaitanya Charitamrita came out. There was all this description there about dishonoring prasadam. So Madhavisa, he decided that instead of throwing out the leftovers, we would put it on trays, scrape it off the plates, put it on trays, all mixed up, and then in the morning it could be reheated, and that would be breakfast. So he tried it a few times, and yeah, it was very controversial. Half the devotees wouldn't take it because, you know, it was the karmi leftovers, and then the other half of the devotees were saying, no, no, it's prasadam, you have to, it's offensive not to, you know, you're seeing it in a material way. And then the counter to that was, no, the prasadam's all right, but it's got the saliva, you know, from the karmi mouths, so why should we eat that? So anyway, there was a debate raging about this. Madhavisa was trying to enforce it, but it wasn't very popular. And I left Melbourne just after that to come to India. So I never found out what actually the end of the, you know, what the result of the debate was. But when Prabhupada came then to Krishna Balaram Mandir for Janmashtami, then I thought, well, this is a good chance. I'll ask Srila Prabhupada now, you know, is this the correct thing to do? What's the actual, you know, transcendental viewpoint? So I described what had been going on. And Prabhupada thought about it for a second, because I asked him, is it, you know, who's correct? So then Prabhupada said, actually, he said, it depends on your realization. He said, it depends on your realization. He said, it's not wrong to eat it. It's very good. But if they don't want to eat it, they should not be forced. So that was, you know, it's prasadam. It's perfectly all right. But if you don't, if you can't handle the thought, you know, of the karmi remnants or whatever, it's all right. There's no harm. You shouldn't be forced. Otherwise, because I think that the idea there was that if you force somebody to eat prasadam in that circumstance, they commit offenses to the prasadam by not relishing it. Yeah, they're forced to do it. So it's better for them, you know, just give them the regular prasadam and let those that want eat the leftovers. Of course, there's also another example, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, famous example. There was a festival, and the prasadam had all been set out, and then a dog came and began eating from some of the preparation. So then it was chased away, and then the devotees wanted to throw away the prasadam because the dog had eaten it. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati went up and he personally ate the same prasadam that the dog had just been eating, because he wanted to demonstrate that this is transcendental, it's not different from Krishna. So anyway, a couple of prasadam stories then. So one should honor prasadam. It's always purifying. It's always glorious. And then going on here, honoring prasadam cannot result in any type of contamination. Rather, those who consider that Krishna's remnants, which are non-different from him, have sin in them, or that there is some mundane fault associated with honoring them, are great offenders. Haribhakti Vilas further quotes the Brihat Vishnu Purana, "O Brahmins, those who have a perverted mentality and think offerings of Sri Hari to be material will suffer from leprosy and reside in hell after losing their wife and children." And then again another quote from the Haribhakti Vilas 282, "It is the duty of all devotees to personally observe Janmashtami. To not do so would be neglecting the instructions of Shastra. However, understanding the following principle given in the Utkal Kanda of the Skanda Purana, many Vaishnavas do not hesitate to serve prasadam to their guests on Janmashtami. Asuchir vapyanacharo manasa papam acharan prapti matrena bhoktavyam natrakarya vicharana. Even if one is in an unclean state of mind or body, or engaged in irreligious acts, he should eat mahaprasadam whenever it is available to him. There is no need to deliberate on this point." So that was Prabhupada's standard whenever we had big festivals. Of course, here in Mayapur, Gopurnima festival, Prabhupada specifically made the arrangements, or had the devotees make the arrangements, that at least some halava or some khichdi should be served out to every guest that came to our mandir on the Gopurnima day. Although we observe the fast, of course, they may not, they'll go off and eat anyway, and it won't be prasadam. So at least give them the benediction of eating Krishna prasadam, even if for us it's a fast day. That's the idea, because prasadam, there's no fault in eating prasadam, and in fact the benefits from eating prasadam are incalculable. You can't actually understand how much purification comes from that. So I was supposed to finish at 7:15. Sri Raga Prabhu is now on the stage, so I'm going to finish at this point. That was a little something, some interesting quotes there about observing Janmashtami festival in the proper way. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Sri Radha Madhava ki jai. Sri Sri Krishna Janmashtami ki jai. Go Premanandi.